Do a good one, honey. Up. Up. I've been skating for so long, like that. Well, it's almost like walking to me. I've been doing it since I was 3 years old. I slip up there, I stumble a little bit, but my reaction to get back on track, it's so quick. I've just been doing it for so long. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a lot of fun. Yeah! Huh. Up. You have to have a lot of trust in this. You gotta trust one another.
So you have to trust that he's not gonna fall or do something wrong, and I have to trust that he's not gonna let me go.
Because if the other one wasn't there, then we wouldn't have an act. Or it'd be a really lame act. I'd just spin around by myself. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how many people would want to see that for too long. You are good looking, but I don't know.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to the work of recent graduates of the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies in Portland, Maine. Our contributors this week included Anne Cadigan, Aaron Davis, Paula Morrow, and Sarah Wilson, with music by A Million Billion. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was me. I'm Greta Cohn in Brooklyn, New York. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org.
And coming up next on Freak Radio, it's your old favorite, Bathrob Spears Broadsides, with the Robe himself. Stay tuned.
I was bitted and bited, I was rammed, I was brommed, but I never partook. I don't need all the news fit to print out a private address. Anything worthwhile will find its way into the press. Heart in my stomach, I was waiting and waiting, I was constantly waiting for the contents to list. I was cookied and counted, I was tracked, I was trampled, I was chatted and chided for the calls that I missed. I belong to the party lines, rotary dials, with person to person, men shaking a hand. I can talk to my friends on a string, and I can. I'm a 20th century man. Clicking and clicking, I was drawn to the channels. I was pulled through the channels like a rat in a maze. I was tutored and timered. I was played and rewinded. I was programmed and primered for the local arrays. As I stared at the clock, there was nothing I wanted to see. As I turned to the box, I knew it would be flashing at me. Constantly clicking, I was pressing on buttons. I was pushing the buttons as I read the display. I was surveyed and taught. I was cornered and caught. I was brought down and fought for just pennies a day. I belong to a solid old 19-inch console with buttons and dials I turn with my hands. I belong to the network all perfectly bland. I'm a 20th century man. 20th century man. right, real lemonade and a spot in the shade. That would be nice. Nothing that beeps. No more buzzers and beeps. Ooh, nobody leaps for some wireless device. We could listen to records. I would still buy a record for a reasonable price. Nothing to do but sit talking to you with a Valentine brew and a big block of ice. Hoping and praying, I was stuck to the message. I was tuned to the message like a rat on a wheel. I was held, I was handled, I was processed and promised. I was traded and transferred, I was shuffled and shield. I was Kennied and Carlos and Beatles and Freddy's 100, one string for some fabulous deal. I belong to the Caldors, the Woolworths, Corvettes. I belong with the products you hold in your hand. I belong to the places with aisles to scan. I'm a 20th century man. I belong to the Kreskies, to Kreskies and Kreskies. I belong to a shopping cart filled by my hand. If it's 7-Eleven, can nobody can. I'm a 20th century man. A 20th century man.
And that was 20th Century Man from the album Apology by Uncle Banzai. Is there any excuse for Uncle Banzai? Well, you be the judge. You're tuned to Free Radio, and you can actually call in with your thoughts, complaints, considerations, and additional news items that I may have overlooked. I'm interested in local issues here in Santa Cruz, particularly those on the streets, particularly those concerning civil rights and the police department, the city council, access to public space, the rights of poor people to assemble, engage in life-sustaining functions, and so forth. My name is Robert Norris, and the name of the show is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. We go till 8, and on Sundays we go from 9:30 in the morning to till 1 in the afternoon. We're also, of course, streaming at freakradio.org, as well as broadcasting at 101.1 FM. Call-in number here is 427-3772, area code 831, 831-427-3772. If you want to catch me off-air, call me on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's a number that you can actually get a real person at sometimes, but you can always get a recording, think of that, and I will try to get back to you if and when I pick up the machine, which eventually I do. Free Radio itself has a voicemail, 427-4523, 427-4523, which is an opportunity for you to call in and register more general concerns, complaints, and questions, as well as offer donations to the studio itself. We are a collective. We don't make any money from commercials. We don't get any grants from the government. We get hassles from the government, actually. So that's a good place to call, 427-4523. If you want to give us something, you know, you can also reach us at freakradio.org in case you want to sign up and apply to be a member of the collective. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hey there. It sounds like Linda from downtown, perhaps.
You got that right.
So, Linda, where are you now?
I'm downtown.
You're downtown.
Hey. Yeah.
There's lots of hate for you downtown. It's not so great for you. So what's happening downtown anyway?
You didn't get my message about what happened to a friend of ours last night, did you?
I don't think I did. When did you?
I called right when it happened at like 11:30 something last night, honey. Right?
I think you know. I think maybe I did get the message. Maybe what we should do though is run it by us again.
Okay. Yeah, I got the information all down on paper. We're all out in front of New Leaf, right? Because they have it all, you know. Gated off, right?
You're talking about half the sidewalk has been closed, the area between the two green kiosks is in front of New Leaf on the sidewalk.
She is.
Uh-huh.
Go talk to her, please. Hold on a second. Go talk to Tiger. Michelle! Talk to him, please. Sorry, honey. We got business going on here. Anyway, a friend of ours was out on the Ave, and he has a black dog. Well, you know, there's a bunch of us hanging out, and a couple of us, you know, comes up to him and says, you know, you can't have a dog on the avenue. And he says, well, it's a service dog. It had a green tag on it. Cop still says, well, you still have to leave. And that was wrong. He's got a service animal. She's got every right to have that dog on the avenue.
You're not talking about Bam Bam, are you?
Yes.
Because it's interesting, Bam Bam and I went to the city attorney's office on Tuesday, the day of the city council meeting, in order to clarify not whether Bam Bam could have his dog on Pacific Avenue, which, as people who are listening may or may not know, it's illegal to have a walk your dog on Pacific Avenue, particularly if you're poor, you know. But it's also the reason we went to the city attorney was apparently the police downtown at that time were allowing Bam Bam to walk his black dog.
Uh-huh. And,
but the boardwalk was giving him more grief, and he wanted to get some kind of a ruling from the city attorney about his right to have a service animal on the Seaside Company property at the boardwalk.
Right.
And
right.
The city attorney at that time chose not to speak to him. John Barrasoni, the actual city attorney, is out of the office, and one of his confederates, Tony Condotti, a longtime co-conspirator in the city attorney's office, was there, but he chose not to talk to Bam Bam. So Bam Bam said he'd come back later, but apparently the police beat the dog and Bam Bam to the punch here, because you say what did he do when he was told to get off the avenue with his dog?
He got off the avenue, and I looked at Bam Bam, and I said, would you like me to go back and get this officer's name and badge number? He says, go ahead, just go for it, and I did.
And who,
I walked right up to him, looked straight at his badge, and I, what's your badge number, sir? Boom, done.
And so who was the police officer?
His name is the initial B. Hold on, I got it wrote down. B. Escalante, badge number 118.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is...
So Bam Bam didn't want any trouble, so he took the dog back behind New Leaf and tied him up.
Well, it's interesting, you know, how that's always an option, and that's the option many people choose, but the day that all of us get together and say, look, it's time to stand up to some of this shit in a peaceful persistent way.
And he kept following us.
Yeah, he did?
Yes, the cop kept following us.
So Officer Escalante
kept
following
me and Eric. Like, go ahead, follow me. I don't care. I've got nothing to lose.
Follow the leader.
No, you want to follow me? Go ahead and follow this old chick. Watch out, okay?
Uh-huh.
I got friends in high places.
So where are you now, Linda? Are you downtown?
I'm down in front of Rogue. Right by O'Neill's, right across from the Cinema 9.
Okay, well, keep those reports coming in. I got to go.
Oh, of course, I will.
All righty, thank you.
Bye, hon.
Bye-bye. So the strange thing about the police situation is that there is it varies from officer to officer, and that's the problem with giving the police broad selective enforcement powers. I'm going to put through a call now to a man headed for the Planning Commission who thinks others should be going there, too.
Hello?
And we're hello there, John Golder?
Yes.
Free Radio Santa Cruz has you on the air. How are you doing today?
All right.
I know that you earlier spoke to me about the importance of a Planning Commission meeting coming up this evening, which, of course, conflicts with my...
Oh, I got a call coming in, Robert. Hang on just a second, quick.
Yes, this conflicts, of course, with a very important Bathrop Spears broadside show that... naturally, most of Santa Cruz is listening to right now. But the Planning Commission is something that I don't have a lot of expertise on, but that John does, and perhaps he'll get back to us in a moment and give us some of the dope. John actually has a service dog himself, which probably one of the more, I call him fancier dogs. He doesn't look fancy, but this dog knows more than, even I may hope to learn about different kinds of tricks. His name is BW, and he's a beautiful pooch who knows how to, he's won many awards, and he has been with John Golder downtown, and he too, when John was homeless, was accosted for having his dog on the avenue, and he actually beat the charge in court. I think he had the dog on
Robert?
A platform.
Yep.
Hey,
I'm
there.
Back. I'm sorry.
Hey there, John. I've actually just been talking with a woman named Linda downtown who tells me that Bam Bam with his black service dog has been banned from Pacific Avenue, or at least the dog has, and I've mentioned that you had fought this fight. But let's get back, and if you want to say a word or two about that, perhaps you can. But now, of course, the reason I called you had to do with your interest in the Planning Commission meeting happening tonight. Why should we be interested in that? What's it about? Where is it happening? And so forth.
Well, because this is the final wrap-up meeting of the Planning Commission, and it's about general plan goals, policies, and programs go up to the city council. So this has been through about a year's worth of process already, actually more than a year, about a year and a half's worth of process. And this is the final meeting where the public can put in their comments and try to influence the Planning Commission to add to or take away from this document. The document's available online on the city's website. If you go to the Planning Department and you go to the General Plan Update section of that, and then you go to What's New, the document is available. You can also make online comments at viewpoint.ci.santa-cruz.ca.us during the meeting.
Where is this meeting and when is it?
The meeting is at the City Council Chambers at, what is it,
809 Center Street
in Santa Cruz, right across from the main library. It starts at 7, and I highly encourage anybody who has something to say about what the city is going to look like in the next 25 years, because if it's not on the goals, it's probably unlikely going to be any part of city policy. If you do get it on the goals, then there's always a chance you can get it as part of city policy.
John, I'm not even going to get into, you know, how little time people are going to have to make a presentation. I take it it'll be 3 minutes or less.
Well,
right?
No, you'll be able to talk about, you know, make comments for the probably typically 3 minutes. It depends on how crowded the meeting is.
Who's chairing this meeting?
Chairman is Commissioner Bill Schultz.
And this is a kind of a group of people appointed by the City Council?
It's the Planning Commission. It's appointed by the City Council. That's correct.
Now, for most people, this is pretty obscure, but why are you going? What is it you want to see in the general plan that is
out
there?
Well, my particular strong interest is about parks and recreation, and I think there's quite a few things wrong with the parks and recreation management. The main thing that we got addressed at the last meeting a couple months ago is that there is no park master plan, or has not been for 40 years, meaning that every time it comes up, the plan of park, that there's all this debate about what kind of park it should be and what's going to be in it. Well, if there was a park master plan, we'd kind of have a balance. We'd know which parks we need more of and which we don't. And the big discrepancy has been that we don't have enough community parks. We've only built one in 40 years.
What park is that?
We got more than enough greenbelt and undeveloped area, and we can't afford to even maintain it.
Now, what was that park that was built in the last 40 years?
Depot Park.
Now, why should people who are concerned, as many who are listening to my show are, about police abuse or homeless civil rights or public access to community spaces and the city council process, be concerned about this planning commission, which sounds like, you know, I mean, you've been talking to this commission for years, and, you know, what the hell good has it given you? Let me ask you that.
No, actually, this process only happens once every 20 to 30 years, so I have not been talking Planning Commission about this process. I've been waiting to talk for 20 years, to tell the truth. The last one was 1995. I was not in town at that time, though I certainly helped work on what eventually became, I was involved in the whole Greenbelt thing from the Greenbelt Committee. But
why should poor people be concerned about that?
Because they should, because the policies and programs and stuff will at some point directly affect citizens. And so the best thing to do is read the document. It'd be nice to have a document in front of you. You can go down. You could probably get it printed out to the library. It's 158 pages.
You got 45 minutes till the meeting begins. So why don't you tell them what about this document needs to be changed?
For your audience, I would look at the safety. I think it's safety and security, and the civic community goals, CC goals, and the safety and security stuff. And land use is always a big one for everybody. Parks and recreation, a lot of that affects the people that is your audience. So you've got to read the document yourself. Anybody can look me up in there. I can probably point out some things that are worth complaining about. It's just important to be in on the discussion, and they can watch it on community TV. And community TV, they can go online to call in.
Will you have your service dog with you, and will you then be arrested for having your...
25, he will be in the car, guarding the car.
So BW will be in the car. So that's not currently a crime, having your service dog in the car, right?
Not yet.
All right. Well, make sure your dog doesn't do any smoking in the car. That could be illegal.
All right. Well, that's it. I got to get ready for the meeting. I will talk to you later.
Thanks for being all available, right, John. So that wasn't terribly informative, but Planning Commission is one of those groups that advises the City Council And then they kind of rubber stamp what these commissions do eventually after making some changes in meetings, subsequent meetings. Now, the last city council meeting of the summer already happened on Tuesday, so there's not going to be another unless there's a special meeting of the city council, which, who knows, there may be. I'd have to check the schedule. But the last regular meeting until mid-September, the Santa Cruz City Council, that was an intentional slip of the tongue. My estimation of the city council continues to drop with each meeting I attend. It did happen already on Tuesday. So for those of you who were hoping to bend the ear of Mayor Ryan Coonerty or get a sharp retort from Councilmember Mike Rotkin, you're going to have to wait until September. You also should note, as far as those of you who are considering running for city council, there are 4 seats open. You have to live in the city, and you have to have all your papers in by August 8th. So for all of you potential blabbermouths who want to speak up to the city council at forums where you might actually get some kind of equal time, although there's some actually debate about that. I talked to an activist today who said that no real alternative candidates like, let's say, Steve Argue in 2000 and 2002 didn't get real time at city council that was equal, I mean, in these debates, that was equal to the time provided other candidates and was excluded from other forums. But in theory, they're supposed to provide equal time for each candidate speaking on issues. And let's put it this way. You're more likely to get more time to speak and challenge city council members at these forums if you're running as a candidate against other city council members than at any other place or in any other time other than on the street if you start a debate. Which probably is the best way to do it, actually, and best way to start it. It's also good to start debates when police are enforcing the vicious city council ordinances that criminalize poor people downtown and give the police massive selective enforcement powers. Which will bring me soon to the main topic of today's Bathrop Spears broadside program, the Downtown Commission's review of the city council's supposed six-month later what's happened with the parking lot panic law. And the parking lot panic law I'll be talking about in a moment. And it's probably numbingly familiar to those of you who've heard this show regularly over the past few years, is the law that makes it illegal for you to sit down under a tree in a parking lot and read a book. Or, for that matter, change a diaper of your baby in your car for more than 16 minutes, even if you're legally parked there, or stop to talk to a friend in a parking lot or garage, that is to say, publicly funded parking lot. Ironically, if you're in a private parking lot, you can chat all you want, but if you're in a public parking lot under the new enlightened Coonerty ordinances, you can't. You are subject to an infraction crime citation or a gruff or friendly move along from a friendly officer or local pest. I'm sorry, local host, as the green-shirted people call them. Or are they wearing purple shirts? I can never keep up with the color of the moment for these hosts, the downtown hospitality crew, who are actually the eyes and ears of the police department and a sort of a cheaply paid advanced security force. So I'll be talking about non-changes in the parking lot panic law, but the supposed six-month look over the law to see if it actually has done anything one way or the other, how the police have enforced it, whether it's achieved its purpose of ending poo-poo, pee-pee, narcotics, needles, assaults, and rapes in the parking lots and garages, as was so endlessly promised by the police department and the city council members supporting this law. But first, a little music.
I didn't like you then, I didn't like you later. Come to think of it, I do not like you now. You said you were my friend, so why can't I remember anything but misery when you would come around? You've got a drink, I see you've got a name tag, I see you've got an escort that must have really cost. You say you really miss me, so why don't I believe you? I'm still stuck remembering all the love not lost. Look at all the women that you never got to meet. Look at all the plastic on display. Look at all those athletes so heavy on their feet. Look, there goes another bad cliche. I saw you in the lobby. I saw you check the mirror. I watched you pull your stomach in. That was really great. You look like you've been waiting for this night to come forever. The leather sweater suits you. You're such a fashion plate. Tell me, don't you think it's kind of strange? The more things change, the more they stay the same. 25 years later and they still misspell my name. I'm so glad I came. You had a dream. I know that dream has faded. I know that you've been holding on to all you used to be. We all make mistakes. Mistakes can last forever. Forever is the kind of thing you get for hurting me. Tell me, don't you think it's kind of strange? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Men will come and men will go. I still have you to blame. I'm so glad I came. Look at all the women that you never got to kiss. Look at how their luck has never left them. Look at how their choices that you made back then persist. Look at how those nights together all come down to this. I didn't say hello. I didn't reminisce. I didn't come to gloat about our lives and our careers. I really should be going. I saw the few I missed. I promise I will hate you for another 20 years. Tell me, don't you think it's kind of strange?
Don't you think it's kind of strange?
The more things change, the more they stay the same. All your best behind you. Now isn't that a shame?
I'm so glad I came.
Nothing comes in handy like a little bit of fame.
I'm so glad.
And that was Uncle Banzai, Enabler. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. Call-in number, 427-3772, in case you'd like to call in. 831, area code, 427-3772. Now on to the parking lot panic law. For those, again, who don't know what this is a law passed a year ago, actually. Its predecessor, the Parking Garage Paranoia Law, as I called it, was passed 2 years ago after 6 months of hearings in the Downtown Commission where police steadfastly refused to divulge statistics, which they still don't give us, which indicate any kind of crime wave or need to close the parking garages or the parking lots 24 hours a day to anyone except somebody parking a vehicle and then only for 15 minutes, a law rather unique to Santa Cruz. I think there's two other cities that have somewhat similar laws in California, but nowhere else that I've heard. And it's particularly outrageous that it happens in Santa Cruz because parking lots and garages both have been traditional gathering spaces, rehearsal places for musicians, places where folks talk, chat, gather. And there's generally been a sense that as public space on the sidewalk shrinks downtown, as the merchants and businesses and cafes seize more and more of Pacific Avenue, as the downtown ordinances, the laws that make it criminal to sit within 14 feet of a building, as benches get removed, as the gentrification ordinances move into full swing, it's important to maintain what public spaces we have. Parks are closed at night. Ranger Wallace's crews roam the Pogonip, destroying tents, and Wallace himself, his ticket book in hand, goes after homeless and poor people in San Lorenzo Park. So you have a situation where people need public places. Now, ironically, people have been driven out of the parking lots and garages, too, so now they gather downtown on Pacific Avenue. And the latest wrinkle in the anti-homeless, anti-street culture scene is to go after the crowd in front of New Leaf by chaining off half the sidewalk at night in order to discourage people from hanging out there and then sending the police down to give harassment tickets for non-offenses that have been behavior that's been made criminal in order to give the police an excuse to move people on and to harass them, like sitting within 14 feet of a building. Something observed by an attorney from out of town who's actually called this show before, Ali. Ali, if you're listening, you're invited to call in again with your thoughts on this, in case you happen to be tuned in. Two individuals, I think, actually recorded their discussion, and we'll actually be hearing that at some point, either on this show or on Sunday when I come back and have a longer period of time. I think I always give a bit too much time to the bureaucracy's pseudo-examination and discussion, the pseudo-democratic process that happens, which doesn't really involve the real interest groups involved, the real people and the real issues, either on the right or on the left, for that matter. Instead, you get a kind of a masked, very partial, elliptical discussion of what's going on. But I'm going to play a little bit anyway, because that's the kind of guy I am. I like these public meetings for some reason, and it gives me an opportunity to comment. But before I do, the public gets to comment. Hey there, public. You're on Free Radio. How you doing?
Hi, Robert.
Hi. Who am I talking to?
Hi, this is Linda Jolly, your friend, the activist.
Oh, hi, Linda. You're calling from Palo Alto or Redwood City?
Actually in Menlo Park.
Menlo Park.
Yeah, and there's some doubt about our phone connection. I got screwed out of my landline connection, so if it gets too bad on my cell phone, I'll just have to try some other time. Can you hear me pretty well?
Oh, yeah, you're doing fine. I want to remind people that you have fought successfully a ticket for allegedly habitating an RV, and people can go online and read about that by Googling for your name, Linda Jolly, J-O-L-L-E-Y. What's cooking in Menlo Park in the last couple weeks that we should be aware of?
Well, there is a thing on the national scene that I wanted to ask you about. Now, maybe you've already discussed this on your show, but today a fellow activist here in Redwood City told me that when they have the Democratic Convention soon in Colorado, they are going to make a point of making sure that the homeless people are not too visible. The streets are full of homeless there, and they're going to give them all tickets to museums and theaters and stuff, and hopefully make it so the town will look nice for the convention and make the problem disappear.
Well, here's an article from the Rocky Mountain News I just Googled. City wants homeless inside for convention. Emergency shelter will open during '08 Dem gathering. Denver plans to clear downtown streets of the homeless during the Democratic National Convention in 2008. The city will open an emergency shelter normally used during winter deep freezes. Apparently they're trying to deep freeze them in the summer, and keep other shelters in the city open 24 hours during the August gathering. In addition, an army of outreach workers, that's, I guess, police officers with their guns tucked underneath their, I'm not sure what the story is, outreach workers will fan out across downtown to persuade the homeless to come inside during the convention. Shelters will be open the entire time to make certain everyone can go inside, and the outreach will have a place. In other words, this is an attempt to eliminate the visible homeless. It masquerades as a compassionate measure, it looks like to me.
Yeah. Well, I read the stuff on the net about it, and several people observed that this seems to be an effort to make the homeless problem invisible for the benefit of the Democratic Convention. And the articles I read said that the Republicans did the same thing a few years earlier.
Oh, and the Democrats did in L.A., I think, in 2000. And again, and I think they also did it in 2004, although, again, I don't have a specific recollection of that. It also mentions in this story, White said, he's the or I should say she's the manager of human services in Denver. The effort is motivated by security concerns and is not just an effort to spruce up Denver's image. Apparently homeless terrorists may be on the loose in Denver. Special attention will be paid to the security zone around the Pepsi Center, which includes the South Platte River, a favorite campground for the homeless. For several years, Denver has operated an emergency shelter, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, you've done tremendous things in Santa Cruz.
We have.
And here in Redwood City, I've been trying to expose what's happened to the, what's happening to the homeless people. The fact that they tried to fine me $200 for simply taking a nap in my landscape truck woke me up to what's going on. I'm a landscaper, not a homeless person, but I had already been an activist, and this woke me up as to what's happening. And so I have to ask you right now, putting the pieces together from what you know about the scene here and there, does it look like there is kind of a nationwide effort to make the homeless problem, like, sort of invisible?
Oh, I think, you know, there's always, first of all, the business paranoia, which has been, you know, their only objective has been to get rid of those goddamn bums from in front of my business. And I suppose if, you know, if I were a merchant, I certainly would have a concern about my profits. But, you know, thank God I'm not a merchant, I guess. And I you know, I do business with merchants, so I have to consider their points of view. I have friends who are merchants, you know.
Well, I certainly agree with people who don't want any town, want their town filled with some of the, you know, there are people that give homelessness a bad name, and certainly.
Well, no, I don't. But I know, I'm not saying that they want the people who give homelessness a bad name. You know, those people removed. They want everybody gone who, you know, might in any way detract from the business of business in their community.
Yeah.
I mean, and you see this masquerading under a number of different guises. You know, it give a hand, not a handout. Oh, stop the panhandlers because they just want to do it for drugs. They're not really trying to get tampons. They really are out there just trying to shoot up meth, you know, as though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and some people are obviously trying to do that, but you don't really make a lot of money panhandling to do that in order to buy expensive drugs. I mean, it's pretty outrageous the kinds of pretexts that the, you know, the merchants use to go after this. But yeah, I agree with you. It is a nationwide effort, I think.
Well, there's a kind of a nationwide stereotype of the so-called typical homeless person that he got that way through his own laziness and that he probably got that way through drugs, alcohol, and so forth. But this week, I myself, I had about 5 days in a row where I could hardly move because I have a thyroid condition, you know, and I was thinking about the fact that a lot of homelessness is simply due to illness. The person can't function, so then they lose their job, and then they lose everything. And with a bad economy, we're going to see probably millions of so-called normal people become homeless. So I'm gravely concerned about the future of this country. I think it's probably the increasing homelessness will cause more crime because there's always a few who don't want to conform to a society that's not helping them. If society is stepping on them and telling them they don't have a right to exist, some of them, a few of them, are going to turn to crime.
Well, criminal aggression is, you know, the main business of what our country is doing over in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, under the pretext, of course, of fighting terrorism, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, the great boogeyman is being used to mobilize, you know, to indebt future generations massively. And, of course, what you see is, you know, this massive foreclosure crisis happening, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac failing and getting bailed out, of course, with our money. So the people, the rich people get away with this shit while the rest of us get to watch as everything sinks down. But,
right.
You know,
I was amused by that. I mean, they're bailing out people who took out liar loans, and those who were too honest to do that and never got homes are not even being allowed to live in their cars.
And massive homelessness is being created in Iraq and elsewhere. I mean, you know, homelessness on a scale that we can't even imagine, really. I mean, in any kind of direct way with our experience here. I mean, And vets, of course, come back, and they end up homeless on the streets, many of them.
Yeah.
You get a much higher percentage of vets who are wounded, you know, and who are brought back, but wounded in many ways, either internally or physically or psychologically. And, you know, the services that they don't get services. They're considered
yeah.
a blight. They're lionized as heroes by those who want to send more people over to be killed.
Right.
But, I call them murderers. I don't mind calling vets murderers because that's what they are.
Right.
Guys who, you know, people like McCain who bombed the North Vietnamese from the air and then got, you know, stuck in camps and POW camps and sold out their fellow POWs, ironically enough, are not heroes at all. They're actually war criminals. And the problem is when the war criminals become the major candidates for election, you know, you get a war criminal and a slick, what do you call it? Oreo, like Obama, running on platforms that have nothing to do with a meaningful change in our policy. Either, you know, I mean, we wondered if Obama, for example, supports the Bring America Home Act, which, are you familiar with that act, Linda?
No.
That is an act that was proposed several years ago, which would have done a number of things to, you know, fight homelessness. And a lot of it, I think, had to do with housing. That's one of the major problems. But it also would have denied funding to cities that criminalize homeless people through the kinds of laws that you are suffering under and that we suffer under in Santa Cruz. Not aware that Barack Obama has done shit around that. There are a few people. I think Kucinich and some others in the House were supporters of it. And I don't know where it actually is now, but I've asked Obama's supporters to come forward with what he wants to do, you know, to restore the civil rights of homeless people. And neither I haven't really asked McCain, I probably should, and I probably will. If any McCain supporters out there have something good to say about what he proposes, that's fine. But, of course, the problem is since both these people are war advocates, then they're going to be creating more homeless here and abroad, frankly, than they can afford to pay for, as far as I'm concerned.
We had one candidate on the team, Dennis Kucinich, who had real solutions and had his priorities straight. His top priority was peace. That was Dennis Kucinich, and he has real solutions for a lot of problems. But I received an essay on the Internet claiming that the candidates we now have are put there by the industrial war complex. I don't know how accurate this is, but it's certainly worth trying to follow the money. And it's interesting that you mentioned merchants with respect to the homeless problem.
Well, I don't think there's a conspiracy to put candidates who are war candidates together. I think rather the media and the moneyed interests in this country, you know, favor particular policies, and the candidates run after the money and the media, and therefore they don't want to, you know, propose things that would make them unelectable, like, you know, cutting the military budget, disarming nuclear weapons so that we don't have to, instead of blathering about Iran getting a nuclear weapon, you want to disarm all the nuclear powers in the Middle East, and beginning with the U.S., you know, I don't know whether it's the 7th Fleet or the 6th Fleet or the 3rd Fleet. I'm not sure which fleet it is, but they got nuclear weapons. They can blow the hell out of everybody over there.
Yeah.
You know, and they are the danger. You know, I mean, the idea of targeting terrorists is preposterous. Anyway, you're in Menlo Park, and I guess what I'm interested in knowing is...
Let me say about the scene locally.
What's happening?
I cannot follow the money on the international level. I don't know how these candidates finance.
Yeah, I don't care about
level.
The candidates.
I can talk about Redwood City. I spoke to the Redwood City Council six or eight times on the general issue of where do you expect the homeless people to go?
And what did they tell you?
You know, you won't let them live in all the shelters are full. The subsidized housing is full. You don't want them living in cars. You don't want them living in the bushes. The police are after them constantly. Where do you expect them to go? And you know what? They did not even know that their own shelters are full.
I remember you talked about this last time. Yeah.
But I'm getting to a point here. They, after almost ignoring me six or eight times, they continually went back to their favorite issue of beautification. They want the town to look beautiful. They spent a whole session giving out little awards for people who put in nicer landscape and painted their buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah, we had that same phenomenon on Tuesday at Santa Cruz City Council, yeah.
Uh-huh. So what I suspect is that the people who are put in power at government in many levels are catering to the moneyed interests who want everything to look nice.
There's no need to suspect it. It's clearly true. The question is, do you have any allies? Have you met anybody else who's interested? Are there other homeless people who you've talked to? Are there any encampments that have been formed where homeless people are supporting each other? Do you have people in vehicles who are gathering together to support each other and try to, resist police harassment?
Well, it's kind of a loose network. We had to have a loose network of people interested, but part of the problem is that most of us are too young to get the whole picture. For instance, I learned from an old timer that in Redwood City about 60 or 70 years ago, they had affordable housing. They had people living in barges and shacks, and if you were poor, you could just live there. But now you can no longer live in those places. People don't understand what's happened because people have accepted the government as a parent, and they trust the government to understand and solve these problems, and it's not doing that. It became a predator. Okay, so what we need is a national awareness of what's going on in the end that the government is not helping the problem. They have become a predator on several levels. They have abolished places where people, low-income people, used to live. We need to heighten, get comprehension of what's going on, and we need to have a lot of people exchange ideas.
I find that I've actually done protests. I think I did a protest in Palo Alto when they were driving the homeless out of a park across from like Stars Restaurant or something.
Uh-huh.
And what we did was a guy called Purusha Obluda, who was then is dead now, but he was an activist with Food Not Bombs. We started serving food right across the street from this fancy restaurant and picketing the restaurant because they were sending the police out to harass Food Not Bombs, which is a group, as most listeners know, that serves that makes poverty visible, often in politically uncomfortable spaces for those who are actually responsible for poverty, mayors, city councils, and so forth, who are actually in the process of trying to cover it up, as you point out. So if a few homeless people can actually make a strong protest demonstration if they're willing to take a risk, that often is the case. Do you have anybody in your, either in Redwood City or Menlo Park or that area over there in the Mid Bay or the, whatever.
We don't have
South
any powerful Bay. Organizations yeah. here yet, but one fellow activist came to the city council with me, and together we proposed that there should be a parking lot where homeless people can camp in tents and vehicles. And we were totally ignored. The council went back to their discussion of beautifying the city, and they wanted nothing to do with
it. Well, of course, they're going to continue to ignore you until you have some power, and the only power you can really get is from homeless, poor people and allies, maybe some allies in the unions, maybe not, maybe some allies in the social service organizations, maybe some allies in the civil liberties groups, maybe some allies, in the communities of color, who are struggling, to fight oppression as if it's happening in your city there, as it seems to be happening elsewhere.
I could not get any help from the ACLU or the Peninsula Community Foundation, and there's not enough comprehension of this problem. For instance, the real problem is not poverty. You're always going to have some poverty. The real problem is the way government is persecuting poverty.
Well, what you need to do is get real specific about what the particular government agencies in that city are doing, and then go to the places where the people are being persecuted and see if they want to join you. And the sad truth of it is, unless they do, we can blather all day on the radio all we want, and nothing really will come of it, which is what I've been doing for 20 years and probably continue to do. But, you need to go out there among the people and organize, as they say, educate, agitate, organize.
Not okay, the city. It's, it's, uh, yeah. it's for, to, to, I don't know how you do it, Robert. I'm not an expert on your
financial situation
or anything, but I know it's very difficult for me to spend a lot of hours. What we need some people who have some wealth to kick in some time and energy on this. I could not even get financing to improve and expand my information service for the homeless. I have gobs of information on where they can get free meals and a lot of help, but I cannot even expand this at the moment.
You know, I suggest you try to contact the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry in San Jose, CHAM, C-H-A-M. They used to be pretty radical. We took over buildings and that were being abandoned, and we turned them over to homeless people, and we got the city so embarrassed that they actually opened them up for families. That was in the early 90s.
Uh-huh.
And now they become...
I'll keep that in mind, but one little baby step that I would like to mention tonight, which is that, first of all, a Stanford professor figured out that if you could get a whole bunch of people talking on the Internet, you know, like a big town meeting, that many problems, many solutions would arise out of this. So what I want to do right now is encourage people to contact me and you and other activists on the net. Can I repeat my email address?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
It's lindajolly9@yahoo.com. I'll spell that. lindajolley9@yahoo.com. Okay. I would welcome any emails, and I will not abuse their email address. No, not going to sell it to spammers, nothing like that. And, you know, if we could get people who have even some small smidgen of concern, people who want to get more information for themselves about this problem. There are a lot of news stories we can forward to each other. We would get more information from different parts of the country. This kind of thing is even happening in Hawaii. They ran the Native Hawaiians now can no longer even camp on their own land. They were run off the beaches.
You know, you might also contact the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco and ask them to send you some street sheets so you can pass those on to homeless people to sell. And that's one way homeless people have of making money and also spreading news about these kinds of struggles up in San Francisco, where there's similar kinds of problems happening and similar kinds of oppression being fought, actually, being fought in the courts, being fought on the streets, and being publicized. Street sheet, Coalition on Homelessness. Think about it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
If you want to email me later, I'll give you more details as to how to reach the people involved.
Yes, I
know you're already going to be writing a story for Street Spirit, the other homeless newspaper, hopefully.
I would like to, I'd like to put my full time into it, but like everybody else, I have to make a living.
I hear you.
There are some people who no longer have to worry about making a living, and if we could get some of those people to comprehend the problem and kick in a little time and inform each other, we could avert a nationwide catastrophe. Right now, I think the future for the nation looks pretty grim in terms of more and more desperate people trying to live in cars and being persecuted by police, trying to live in the bushes, being told they cannot live anywhere.
Well, in the meantime, keep documenting what's happening around your area, because you know, I need to hear what else is happening there in your area, not Denver, Redwood City, but you know what's happening. Well, I guess you are in Redwood City, but you know you need to get that information, and you need to find it somehow, because you're not going to find it in the newspapers usually. You know, I don't know where you actually got to go out and look for it on those moments when you have that kind of time. And I guess you know you can ask on the internet. I just don't know. I guess I'm skeptical of the internet because it impresses me that people who use the internet aren't people who want to take risks usually. You know, they're pretty, you know, they're nerds or they're students who are not terribly, you know, willing to step out and do stuff. Although that varies. I mean, there are some anarchists who are willing to put their necks out on the internet. That's true. So.
Actually, a good deal of the information that I have about what's going on in various parts of the country, including Santa Cruz, came to me from Vivian Lerner, on the internet. She's a very humanitarian gal who passes on emails of all kinds, especially problems like this, on the internet. And she's forwarding stuff right and left all over the place.
All right. Well, that sounds great. I'm gonna roll on you, Linda. We're talking with Linda Jolly up in Menlo Park right now.
Yeah, Menlo Park and Redwood City are right close together. Well, once again, I urge people to contact myself and Robert, go to his website, and just get in touch and learn and figure out what's happening and figure out if everybody could do some small part, then we would be able to avert about this.
Yeah, LindaJolly9@yahoo.com is Linda's email. And the website, there are several websites you can go to around Santa Cruz homeless civil rights issues. Like one is HuffSantaCruz.org, HUFFSantaCruz.org. Another one is HumanityForHomeless.blogspot.com, Humanity for Homeless. And a third one is the Human Rights Organization, whose website I always get wrong, but Google for Human Rights Organization in Santa Cruz. Linda, thank you, and feel free to call back. You know, I'm looking for updates always.
Great. If somebody forgets my email address, they could reach you, right?
Sure. 423-4833 is the phone number here for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Okay. Great. Hey, thanks a million, Robert. You're doing a great job.
Hey, Linda, keep it up and let us hear what's happening.
All righty. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. If you had a problem living in a vehicle or with someone living in a vehicle, or do you have any thoughts on what you've heard, hey, an actual phone call. I'm impressed. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert, I just heard a comment earlier, and, you know, I'm kind of grateful for that comment because now I know why you have the attitude towards me the way you do and the way you snub me off. But, you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, not all of us were born with a gold spoon in their mouth. And that comment that you made about, you know, you have no problem calling vets murderers. You know, not all of us come from a rich and wealthy family like you do. That comment could only come from somebody who comes from such a wealthy family that you'd never had to worry about doing something like joining the military right after high school without having anywhere else to go. And I really resent you.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Wait. You're disrespectful. Slow down. I want to respond to what you're saying because I think it's important. But, you know, if you don't want to stay on the line, that's your right, too. Yes, I regard vets over in Iraq who kill Iraqis as murderers and, frankly, war criminals as well. And that has nothing to do with rich people or poor people. The fact of the matter is the generals who have a lot of money usually come from pretty wealthy backgrounds are also killers. And I understand that people are driven into this situation by, you know, because they are poor in many respects. But, you know, that doesn't change the reality. I mean, death squads in South American countries are made up of poor people often, you know, who do so, you know, to make money. You know, people join these services because they need to often to make money. That doesn't change the reality of what they do. And it has nothing to do with how much money they are making or where they're coming from. I understand that economic necessity has, you know, has its pressures, and there's no question about that. And, you know, because I don't join in the whoop-de-doo, rah, rah, rah for, you know, the idea that vets are heroes, I don't think people who go to foreign countries and kill people abroad are heroes. I really don't. I don't think that we should abandon them when they come back. I think they should not be arrested. They should get the services and education and rehabilitation they need. And I think in a way that certainly they're also victims, but they're also responsible for what they do. They probably have more power than the people they're killing. I mean, let's be realistic about this. Let's abandon our illusions about this. It has nothing to do with wealth and poverty. It has to do with, you know, I think overcoming the mythology of, you know, vets are heroes under all circumstances. Rah, 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 whip out the 4th of July flag. Support your troops stuff. I really disagree with the caller on this issue. That doesn't mean at all that I don't support the struggle of vets locally to restore their own civil rights. And I'm sorry that caller, that you misinterpret what I'm saying to indicate hostility toward vets as individuals. It's not any kind of hostility. I'm hostile to the system that creates criminals like this. And by criminals, I'm really the main criminals, of course, the people at the top. But they hide behind the fantasy of support your troops. And I'm not going to let that obscure what I think is the truth here, and I'm going to continue to say that. And if it makes people angry, well, let's talk about it some more, and let's see what the truth is. 427-3772 is the number to call in. And I don't think that was really the issue we were talking about, although, you know, it certainly is a point of view I have, and you can contest it if you want. What I was talking about before was somewhat lower level situation. The status of people in Santa Cruz who want to use public spaces like parking lots and garages and are now in a position to be regarded as criminals for doing so by the city authorities, because that's a convenient way of clearing off a lot of public space and locking it off, because people might commit crimes there. The main crimes being, of course, camping, sleeping, sheltering yourself from the cold. But there are other, you know, concerns that the powers that be have talked about, partying, you know, drug use. And there's the occasional assault that happens, too, although there's been no indication at the parking lots and garages at any higher level of assault or criminal behavior generally than anywhere else in town. And if you're going to claim that you should be walling off these areas and closing them down to public use except in very limited ways, then the same kinds of arguments can be used for other public areas. And I think that whole thing is a horrible argument. Anyway, here is a meeting of the Downtown Commission that happened in June. This is actually not the meeting I went to this morning. There was a follow-up meeting this morning. But this is a meeting where a member of the Downtown Commission, Sheila Coonerty, tried to get information from the police department on what's happening after 6 months. They passed this law that says if you're going to be in a parking lot or garage at all, you have to have a car or vehicle, and you have to be gone within 15 minutes. So it's illegal to stop and chat with a friend and so forth. Is this helping the situation as far as crime goes? Well, the police department was supposed to come back with a report to city council, and of course they came back with some statistics that weren't particularly helpful. I actually got copies of them with me. I was able to get them. They weren't online. They weren't available for people to look at who are interested in this issue. But you could go down to the Downtown Commission and get them. And here's the discussion that happened last month at the Downtown Commission. And I play this because this month was pretty much a repeat of last month. The police aren't accountable. They don't have to give you the stats. They just have to come in the uniforms with, you know, the thumbs up and the smile and the things are going well. And that's sufficient. It's not a good way to go, folks. You need to have a real discussion of these issues and not just have assurance from people in uniform.
So that motion carries unanimously as well. This is a very short meeting.
Now, this is the chair of the Downtown Commission. Her name is Jerry Mandel. She is a downtown merchant who, frankly, and I don't mean any personal disrespect, I've always been somewhat put off by, well, her opinions and mine are at opposite ends of the spectrum, so that's one problem. But she's now the chair of the Downtown Commission, and I observed her in action today. And she is following the Coonerty program of cutting back public comment from members of the public in unnecessary ways, but with some gusto and some enthusiasm. One of the ways she cut back comment was she's not allowing organizations 5 minutes to speak instead of 3 minutes. Another way she's cutting them back is she's not allowing any discussion on information items. I insisted there be discussion, and her response was to cut back my time on other items, punitively. I was the only person speaking, so there wasn't like a huge crowd there that needed to talk. She just pretty clearly either didn't want to hear from me personally or didn't want to hear from, he wanted to make clear that the public had even less time to talk. And this, of course, is a way of discouraging people from coming to meetings of the Downtown Commission, which is supposed to be a group of citizens that you, who work out the issues before they get to City Council. It's kind of like a committee of City Council in a way, where the community can actually interact more at greater length on issues. And indeed, in some cases, they do. But probably, it seems in the end, what happens is these commissions are simply rubber stamping bodies for the City Council, and that's really unfortunate, although perhaps predictable.
Well, we still have to discuss the information items. But we have items, information items on the agenda as well, and if anyone wants to pull one of those for discussion, we can do that.
I would like to pull update on the parking lot ordinance.
And this is another change. Information items were never items to be pulled, that is, say, skipped over unless a member of the commission pulled them. They were always items that were gone through individually. There was commission comment on them, and then there was comment from the public. Now, the Jerry Mandel has adopted a new Coonerty-esque policy, which involves skipping all the items unless a commission member pulls the item, and in this case, I requested to speak on one of the items, not knowing she'd changed her policy. And I think rather than, you know, create a lot of controversy, she allowed me to speak, but she indicated the new rule is you don't get to speak on items. These are information items that she doesn't feel the public has any right to talk about, even if the commission itself talks about the items. Now, again, we're listening to a meeting of the Downtown Commission that happened in June, not the one that happened earlier today. But this sets the stage for what happened today.
Okay. I'd like to pull the history of the parking deficiency fees.
Okay. Well, let's just start. Let's just go in order then. Number four, history of parking deficiency fees. That was very...
My apologies. This... I thought we'd were in the right place here, but we're actually going to be hearing another item. A lot of what the Downtown Commission does is it considers parking fees, which pay for a lot of the downtown structures and such. And what they're trying to do is to build a whole parking garage. That was what the main topic of both the last two Downtown Commission meetings has been, on top of the area next to the farmer's market where the drum circle sits, parking lot number four. And that has provoked some anger and some concern, but of course no public outreach to any of the groups affected who use the public space. And indeed, the police were trying to run people out of there using the parking lot panic law, the 15-minute law, although unsuccessfully. People resisted it and the police had to back off. Let's hear a little music and we'll be right back. And I will come on with the, hopefully, the properly queued up tape.
Love is talking like a human being. I could stand the silence if it had some meaning. I could take the violence if it added spark. If these fits of caring weren't so demeaning, I could stand you staring in the dark. I can feel you staring in the dark. Love is smiling when the punch is low. I could stand the pressure if you didn't need me. I could take the pleasure with a grain of salt. I would lose the anger if you didn't feed me with the constant pangs of fear. And and fault. I love you, I love you, no really, I love you, I love you. Please trust me, must we keep repeating? I love you, I love you, just call my machine in between when you've seen me and when you've been seen, 'cause I love you, 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 I love you. Love is hoping that the door won't slam. I could stem the flowers if the thorns would stick me. I could stay for hours if you'd let me plead. I could bring you closer if you'd show some hunger. You're just so much younger than I need.
And that was Mean-Spirited. Actually, I think the name of the song is I Love You, 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 I'm Trying to Read. Sorry. And it's been struck through with the comment, if you look at the marginal notes, Mean-Spirited. So I thought it was called Mean-Spirited, but it's not. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and we have about 50 minutes left in the show. We're about to hear some comments from Downtown Commission member Sheila Coonerty, who is raising the issue of what's happened with the parking lot panic law. She didn't call it that. Parking lot trespass law, where there was supposed to be an update as to whether it was working or not, and how it was working, and how well it was working.
To the informational item 5, update on parking lot ordinance. Sheila, you wanted to say something about that. Right.
Now it's my turn to be cranky. This went to the City Council on the 27th of May. Means up there?
Yeah.
So this is the 6-month update?
That's correct.
And we get it after they already got it and nothing happened. Is that right? What?
Excuse
is that
me,
correct? We're just being informed that they were informed, and they didn't do anything further.
It was an informational report to the City Council.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, we spent meeting after meeting. We had the reason behind the parking lot and the garage ordinances were to clean up certain things that were happening and to stop illegal activity and drug use and all those things in the city. And this report only talks about how many calls they've gotten. None of the information that we got the first time around is evaluated in terms of whether it's still happening. And the request for the 6-month update was also supposed to look at whether the effect of the ordinances was to simply spread out that illegal behavior.
Sheila was the one person who voted against this ordinance a year ago, although she voted for it with respect to the garages but not with respect to the parking lots. And it passed over her objection to heading for City Council, and it was then passed by City Council, I think, 6-1 or 5-2. But she's mistaken in suggesting that there really was any much useful information given in the first place by the police department and the parking authority. There was some account of complaints by parking attendants about problems they had in the parking garages, and that's true. There were sort of logs given in some respects for some of the garages, though not for the lots. There was never any information really given about that. There were some arrests given for the parking lots and garages, but no comparison with the area around to indicate there was some special problem in the lots and garages, other than just the perceptual problem that, you know, if you're walking in a garage at night, you might feel more nervous because of controlled space, or if you're walking in a parking lot, you're going to your car and you're nervous because you're going to your car and it's a little off the main drag, maybe. But there's no indication, or no stats showing increased crimes in these areas, over a period of time or compared with anywhere else in the city. They didn't present any stats for that. And so Sheila is mistaken to believing that they ever did. Of course, you know, I can understand her wanting to think they did because she voted for this law with respect to the garages, even though we didn't get the stats that might show that at least arguably there's a real crime problem there that has to be addressed. There wasn't. And that was the problem. But it was simply the police getting more power, Coonerty pushing a law that his employees expressed some apprehension about going to their vehicles. And what you get now is Sheila's complaining that the information coming back contains even less information than they got before. It doesn't show whether there's been a decrease in crime in the parking lots and garages. It just has sort of vague citywide stats. It does show the number of tickets issued in the garages. Matt, there are 8 citations that are issued, I believe. And it shows the number of and the number of calls for service. That is to say, the number of times people were called for service in these garages. It doesn't compare them with previous calls for service, and it doesn't give any indication of criminal activity in the garages in terms of arrests or complaints. There's nothing there at all. So this is the reason she's a little concerned, and legitimately so. My point, of course, here is that she didn't really get good stats in the first place. What did she expect the second time around? But I'm glad she raised the issue.
Elsewhere in the city. And so, on the one hand, I understand that this is the kind of data the police have, but I'm wondering how it was really important to come and tell us all the stuff before this, but it's that information didn't come to us. We weren't asked what did we want for 6 month input. We didn't hear, none of those people are here today to talk about it. And I'm annoyed at the city council that this was all they wanted too. But is there anything we can do about that? I mean,
I can ask Zach Friend to come and address this at the next meeting if you'd like.
Okay. And maybe the public works people that were here en masse last time in terms of the quality of life and what they were seeing. I mean, I would like to know that. I'm just wondering if there's any way we can also...
Sheila, are you asking if the ordinance is achieving desired result?
Is the ordinance achieving what... the decrease in the behaviors that they brought to us in multiple meeting information, and yet all this does is say how many calls they've had and how many arrests they've had.
City staff is very pleased with this ordinance and how it's working.
Well, I'd like to know that in more detail. And
before we go any further, and I hope I'm not spoiling the surprise, but today's meeting, in which this was supposed to happen, in which we were supposed to get all the details, gave us zero details, just a lot of anecdotes from Zach Friend, who's the police department PR guy. He didn't like it that I call him the police department Goebbels, but I kind of think maybe I should call him the Scott McClellan of the Santa Cruz Police Department. Maybe that'd be better, although it might even be a worse kind of nomer than Goebbels. I don't know. I mean, people who put a positive spin on a negative thing and deceive the public, I don't like, and that's what I think Friend does. He obscures and he deceives, and I don't mind being very specific about how and when he does this, and that's, I think, what we need to analyze and get into. But the problem that Sheila had here is she didn't ask for specific stats. She didn't say, I'd like to know, you know, I'd like to see the stats for how many crimes were committed in which parking lots when, and how many crimes were committed before in these parking lots, how many break-ins, how many assaults, how many rapes, how many... camping tickets, that was the major crime in the parking lots, parking garages, actually, not the parking lots, and so forth. She didn't make that request, and in failing to make that request specific, she didn't get what she wanted, even though it was kind of clear that she wanted that. She was looking for specifics. He wants some more detail. But what did Zach Friend come back with this morning? He came back with nothing, and he also came back, ironically enough, and I'm going to be playing this on Sunday in more detail probably, particularly if I get bored and people don't call in. You'll have to suffer through downtown commission discussions. He also refused to provide those statistics. He said, we don't have to do that. We answer only to the city council. We don't answer to the downtown commission. And until the city council asks us, we're not going to do it. You can make a Public Records Act request, in essence, he didn't say this, and pay for it. And but that's another issue. You're going to have to do it as a private citizen. So he was doing the same thing that what's happening with the Measure K Commission, obscuring what's going on, refusing to divulge information from the police department. And for me, there can only be one real motivation for this, which is to cover up the fact that there is no particularly useful purpose this law is serving. Now, I'll take one step back on that, because I think that when you ban everybody from an area, though there's an argument that, you know, the less eyes that see, the more likely there is for crime to appear. But, you know, when you ban people, it's true that you may have less, you'll have less of all kinds of activity occurring. So you have less crime appearing. You have less, you know, useful use of the area for the traditional uses that parking lots and garages have been used for, which is not just parking cars, but all kinds of things. They're public spaces downtown that were you know, used traditionally for everything, and properly so, and profitably so, and I think creatively so. But when you lock them all off, and you make it a crime to be there and discourage people from going there, you probably will have a lower crime rate. And the fact I wouldn't be surprised if there were, but I'm impressed with the monumental arrogance of the Santa Cruz Police Department in not being willing to just, you know, spit out the stats. And it makes me suspicious that maybe there's a story that's untold here. I mean, I'm no lover of the Santa Cruz Police Department in terms of how it deals with anti-homeless laws and how it creates them, actually, and supports them. When I talked to Lieutenant Martinez and Sergeant Harms today, who are the two police officers who came to the downtown commission that met today at 8:30 in the morning, they insisted that the police department had nothing to do with the creation of this law. And while it's true that the law came out of the bowels of the Public Works Department and the Parking Authority, it is also true the police department gave it full support. And they didn't in any way discourage it from proceeding, and they said it would provide them with useful tools. And they didn't suggest, you know, we're a police department, it's not necessarily wise to give us every power in the world, because we're also only human beings, and the more power you give us, frankly, the more likely it is we'll abuse the power at some point, or that some people will. And to give people selective enforcement powers, which is what this law is, because you can see it every Wednesday at the farmer's market, the police will not enforce the law if the community resists successfully. And good work, community, in keeping the drum circle next to the farmer's market going on Wednesday, in spite of police pressure using this Coonerty law. They've been unwilling to write tickets because they realize it would cause quite a hubbub. It would cause a massive civil disobedience resistance, or they're afraid it would. So they let it go, and they pick off people individually at other times with citations or with warnings or with polite, smiling, friendly, fascist pats on the back, surrender your rights here, and do so, you know, in the nicest possible way. I call that friendly fascism. A book was written around that, using that title, about 15 or 20 years ago. Anyway, here's more of the downtown commission hearing, again from a month ago. We'll get to the more recent one probably on Sunday.
This is like the personal information that could be way off.
I know that
all of a sudden Santa Cruz High had drug users all over their baseball field. The kids were picking up syringes and needles everywhere. The girls were being harassed that were playing soccer by people on the football field. And so my prediction was Yeah, okay, fine. You move this problem around to areas where you don't have downtown Houston, you don't have as many police patrolling. And so I wanted to know, was it happening in the Beach Flats? Was it happening elsewhere where it would be an increase in areas where we're not putting the resources? And the city staff here could be really pleased with the ordinances, and the people elsewhere could be really not pleased. And I thought the whole purpose of the six-month review was to look at whether that had happened. And so I'm kind of like, what?
Sounds like we've got a few future agenda items developing here.
Yeah.
And this was a request I was going to make. I think in past on past agendas, we've had a heading that says future agenda items. And I think we need to, if we didn't, we need to, going forward, we need to have that heading so that we're sure to pick up all these things from commissioners. And I did notice that in our minutes from our April 10th meeting, there was a request for a future agenda item from Jeffrey that didn't get on the agenda, where he asked.
And what we have here is, I don't want to call it a lot of double talk from Chair Jerry Mandel, but instead of going to the substance of Sheila Coonerty's request, which is, well, here is a law which we essentially created and sent to the city council and they rubber stamped, the parking lot panic law, which made remove 10 square blocks of city space from public use and totally set up a situation for a real confrontation between the police and groups of people using these spaces if they resist meaningfully, and I hope we do. And we did successfully, as I say, in the farmer's market. Instead of acknowledging this, taking some responsibility for it, Jerry Mandel, who was a big supporter of this law, goes into this procedural gobbledygook double talk, which sounds like to me, which he's talking about, oh, this can be a future agenda item, yada, yada, yada. Instead of saying to the police department, bring us back some stats that actually address the issues of whether crime has increased or decreased in each of these parking lots and how so. And Sheila Coonerty is concerned that, you know, maybe it's spread out to other areas. People, you know, although, again, there was no showing of significant crime in the parking lots and garages. Maybe it's moved to the parks, or not the parks, to the Santa Cruz High, you know, or to other places. And she wanted information on this. And instead of emphasizing that, you know, the reputation of this downtown commission, insofar as it's, of course, it doesn't have any reputation as far as I'm concerned. You have, you know, people like Joe of Atlantis Fantasy World, who stands up shouting V for Vendetta and how he's a big anarchist supporter of the rights of citizens against the tyranny of government, and then pushes through the biggest power grab the police have had in some time in Santa Cruz with this parking lot panic law. It's amazing either the blindness or the hypocrisy of merchants on this downtown commission, and they are mostly merchants who are on the downtown commission. Here's some more from this meeting from June of the Downtown Commission discussing the question of the 15-minute law, the law that makes it illegal for you to walk into a parking lot at all unless you have a vehicle or car there, a bike there, and subjects you to a $100 to $200 fine if you do.
That the topic of how the police department will address the issue of increased crime during the summer season be agendized for our May meeting, and it didn't make it to the agenda. You can read it on the minutes, page 2. So I think this is an area where we could make a little bit of improvement, and the commissioners will feel like they're being heard a little bit better.
Well, and I actually wasn't sure if the city council heard this and accepted it, that we had any business intruding again. But so I was thinking, well, I could just go down to the city council and yell at them in my 2 minutes. But since they went to all the effort of asking us to look at this in the first place, I think we should bring it up in some way.
Okay, so June, you had something to say.
I just want to totally agree with Sheila. I was really shocked when I read that was the update.
Yeah.
That there wasn't more to it. So
yeah.
Joe.
When I read it, I'm.
June Hoffman, who owns and runs Hoffman's Bakery on Pacific Avenue, may have been really shocked, but when the police came back with absolutely nothing today, she didn't express that shock in any way, and I think she commended the cops. Maybe she didn't. Maybe it was another member of the downtown commission. But it's just, it's amazing how quickly people will commend the police. It's kind of like calling the vets heroes, you know, instead of war criminals or murderers. Police, when they do a good job, I commend them. In fact, I wrote a commendation for Sergeant Harms 2 days ago. And ironically, I sent it to his superior, both of whom appeared this morning at the downtown commission. It was a minor thing. He, you know, he handled a woman on a bicycle who was drunk or intoxicated in some way and arrested her. She was kind of ranting and raving and didn't want to stop and almost rammed into him and had been complained about by somebody else in a car. And I was right there. I was talking to Sergeant Harms at the time in front of New Leaf Market. And I thought, you know, this was a professionally done activity. Didn't injure the person. She needed to be taken off her bike because she was a danger to herself and others on the bike, it seemed like to me. She didn't acknowledge it. I mean, and so I think he dealt with it in a professional way. And I wrote a letter to the police commending him. But the problem is that that's not most of what Sergeant Harms does. Most of the time I see Sergeant Harms, he's running around in uniform in areas downtown where his presence essentially serves as a reminder to any poor person there that they better follow the class legislation that the city council has enacted, or they're going to face police force. And even when it's fraudulently done, so for instance, in front of New Leaf Market, you'll see signs in the New Leaf window that say, please don't loiter within 20 feet or smoke within 20 feet of this business. And you'll see this not only on the New Leaf, but you'll see it in the area outside. You'll see it on the kiosks out there. I don't know if it's on El Fresco's, but I believe it's on Cafe Campesino. And there's no law that makes it illegal to loiter anywhere. Loitering is allowed. Loitering is assembling. You have a right to assemble. If you're not blocking the sidewalk, you can loiter all you want. But the merchant community downtown is trying to scare people away from that area because they don't like the crowds that have gathered. Now, you can say, well, what do you do? What about these problems? I played some of the crowds at night there, and sometimes it's pleasant and sometimes it's less pleasant. And my response, of course, is initially to say, you enforce real laws against real crimes. You don't arrest people for sleeping. You don't arrest people for sitting down on the sidewalk. You arrest people for engaging in violent or abusive behavior. I don't like to see drug arrests. I think that's bullshit. I think there's a lot more damage done by pharmacists and by doctors and by bars than by low-level salesmen of even hard drugs, although I'm no big fan of hard drugs. You know, but the phrase narcotics I heard used a lot today at the Downtown Commission, but there was no distinction made in that phrase between marijuana and other drugs. So, for instance, the phrase narcotics in the Santa Cruz Police Department refers to marijuana as well as everything else. And so we don't know what percentage of the police budget is going for that, what amount of police time is going after people like Craig Canada for medicating, you know, in Abbott Square, trying to discreetly do that behind a bush somewhere, or how much of it goes to, you know, knock out the Mexican mafia that's dealing heroin, as though that were a major objective and a realizable goal of the Santa Cruz Police Department. Let's get serious, folks. So the problem I have with commending police officers is, while I think it's appropriate, and I like a lot of these people as human beings and as individuals, when they don the uniform, they unfortunately catch all the shit that goes with it. And they don that mantle. They assume that responsibility. And unfortunately, it's not something that's pleasant or positive, I think, in most cases. There are exceptions. You know, there are exceptions where people are helped. My car has been recovered by the police on a number of occasions, and I've thanked them for it. You know, that's great. There are, you know, police have uses, and I'd like to see the community actually take over those uses, but that kind of system hasn't evolved yet. And so I acknowledge that. The problem is that most areas where I see the police downtown, I see problem behavior based upon enforcement of laws that are discriminatory at the beginning, discriminatory from the word go. Let's hear the rest of the Downtown Commission meeting from June, and then we'll turn to actually some more some street stuff where possibly you'll hear some police encounters and see what I mean.
Okay, this is what is.
This is Joe of Atlantis Fantasy World, who I haven't had much to say to since he hypocritically voted for this parking lot panic law a year ago, after mouthing lots of concerns about selective enforcement and then just rolling it right through and saying, oh, well, we're just an advisory body. That's all we can do. I'll send it to the city council.
Was, and how is this different from what was? There's no they in our request for documentation, they seem to keep telling us, well, these are the reports, this is what we have. What we're, unless I'm wrong, what we're asking for is, what was the situation before? Now that we've had the ordinances, what's the situation now? So can you show a correlation between the ordinance having this effect on something? I don't see that in this documentation. I simply see an increase or decrease percentage of certain, but nothing to correlate that that means that these ordinances have caused this change to happen in this way.
Jeffrey?
I certainly don't want to speak for the police department, but I think that might be challenging considering the fact that there have been multiple acts of civil disobedience protesting the ordinance that have caused individuals to intentionally challenge it, to force businesses to call, to do all these sorts of things. So the sort of raw data that might exist to support the effectiveness of the ordinance might be extremely challenging based on that fact.
And this is a guy who I'm not sure what his who he represents or what business he's affiliated with, if he is affiliated with a business. But he's a nice guy. All these downtown commission members are nice, just like the police officers, if you approach them as individuals. But as a group, they are putting forward laws that essentially give the police the power to accost you and stop you from engaging in innocent behavior in public space downtown. And it's humiliating, it's degrading, and it sets a very bad precedent. It's the Santa Cruz's miniature version of the Patriot Act is what it is. It gives the police an excuse to interrogate and question you, although you should always say, am I free to go? And I have nothing to say, I want to speak to a lawyer, and I don't consent to a search. You know, is a good response to anything the police do. But the problem is that they're denying you the right to use public spaces that have traditionally been open to everyone. And it's wrong and foolish and divisive to do this. And it's sort of a small-minded merchant mentality. The Coonerty mentality is at work here. Now, I want to make it clear, it's interesting, Sheila Coonerty opposed at least part of this law, and she's the critic saying, where are the stats, along with June Hoffman and Joe of Atlantis Fantasy World. But are they going to do anything more than make a few squeaks? Are they going to do something real, like get the stats through Public Records Act requests from the police and then raise the issue and ask City Council to reconsider this law and to change it? In reality, of course, the way that we have of dealing with it is by civil disobedience and civil resistance through getting all together and saying, we're going to use the public spaces as they were intended to be used and as they have been traditionally used in Santa Cruz, not simply as parking lots, as places that are kept pristine only for vehicles, but as places where the community can use for a variety of purposes in a reasonable interchange. And that's what we did at the farmer's market. And, of course, what they're now doing is they're going to put a 4- or 5-story parking structure right down on top of this, although they're having problems generating the funding for this, and that's one of their big projects. That was the main purpose of both these meetings, which I'm not really going into because, frankly, I don't feel I have the expertise, and, frankly, I don't have the interest, and I kind of think it's a done deal, although I didn't get a lot of specific answers when I asked some of the bureaucrats what... Was there any real alternative system considered? you're building a lot of parking lots and the price of gas is skyrocketing, and it could be that the number of vehicles using the city is dropping. You know, is, have you considered other alternatives? And I didn't get very clear answers to that. But that's another issue. Again, back to the Downtown Commission, June, on the issue of 15 minutes and you get a ticket, or you don't get it. You don't get to, you know, linger in a parking lot at all unless you have a vehicle. Go buy yourself a car or bike, and then you can hang out in a parking lot or if you want. Oh, for 15 minutes.
Speak on what I'm hearing is two issues right now. Jeff, if you still want him to talk about increased crime during the summer.
Of course, by that time it'll be in July.
Oh, sorry. Increase. How they will address the issue of increased crime during the summer season. So if we can have Zach come to our meeting next month.
And also perhaps.
And to talk about the park. Yeah, give us a report.
Public Works people, too.
And Public Works,
somebody. I mean, you said that they're really happy with it.
I do have to remind you, this is an advisory body, too. The city council had asked for the six-month review. The police department brought it back to the city council.
We also asked for a six-month review.
Yes, and they are the ones that were providing the review, so we provided that to you.
Right, so. But it's not a review of what we asked for. And I think since we were asked to take part in it, we, as an advisory body, we still have a right to be following that, and it's in the bylaws. We have a right to say, okay, you brought this to us, we approved it, we sent it on to the city council on the basis we're going to get this information, and this isn't the information we requested. Okay.
So you would like to see not just a representative of the police department, but also someone from Public Works to talk
yeah,
about
I mean, if they're really happy, I'd like to hear them say what they're specifically happy about.
All right, well, they don't
and make me feel better
over here.
And again, the problem is Sheila's not asking for the stats. She's just asking for the front men and women to come forward. And what she got was Zach Friend and then a woman from the parking authority making sort of vague anecdotal statements. So things are much better, without presenting any kind of figures, logs, statistics, or anything. And, you know, we get to take it, you know, on their word. And Sheila then didn't like that at today's meeting, which we're going to be hearing on Sunday when I come back in the morning for my next show. But, you know, she was essentially told, you know, essentially she's told, fuck you. We don't care. We don't have to give you those stats because we're only responsible to city council. Get the city council to insist you send them to us, give them to you. And who knows, maybe Sheila has enough pull with Ryan, who's her nephew, you know, to do that. But she shouldn't have to do that. These are advisory commissions that do all the work on these issues, that created the laws in the first place, and, you know, that did the original spade work. They need to know what's going on, although even when they do, it doesn't seem they make the right decisions. But, you know, at least the public gets more of a look into what's happening. And, of course, we don't get it. Here's the rest of this meeting. At least on this issue.
They can just come over and make a statement. Yeah. I mean, we know they're... I believe you that they're happy. They're just going to come and say they're happy.
Yeah.
But,
oh,
but it doesn't hurt to hear it.
About what are they happy in? Is it worth...
you have questions.
Kids picking up syringes on the ball field and people in beach flats having it. Is it worth it to me? And I know Jeff said we're just worried about downtown. But we are worried about the whole community.
No, and I don't think we should stop one program that's working because it pushed a problem somewhere else.
It's Jerry Mandel who says the program is working. Of course, she's the one who pushed it in the first place, has pushed for harsh downtown ordinances. I think she's she has a little store downtown, which I'm sorely tempted to picket. But, you know, she has a right to her opinion. Again, I've criticized Ryan Coonerty, the mayor, for having cutting back public comment time at city council. Jerry Mandel is doing the same thing at the Downtown Commission, which is a sort of a lower-level body, but one where it's important because people have an opportunity at a more grassroots level to kind of get in before the bad laws come up for a final vote, although often that doesn't make a lot of difference. But still, the Downtown Commission heard the parking lot panic law or the parking garage paranoia law, its grandfather or its father, for three or four sessions before it hit the city council. The city council then quickly zipped it through. So the real discussion happened at the downtown commission level. Jerry Mandel is doing a sort of a similar cutting back of public comment. She is cutting back public comment by not allowing, by first of all, zipping through so-called information items, claiming that they don't even have to be discussed unless a member of the downtown commission pulls them to discuss. And this is information items, ironically, that don't get, the information doesn't get on the internet. They, if you go to the internet, you'll see there's supposed to be a link for these items, such as the somewhat meaningless stats presented around the parking lot law, which just showed the number of calls for service and the number of arrests, but didn't show anything about dropping in the crime rate, didn't show anything about differences in crime between parking lots and elsewhere from between now and a year ago before the law was passed. None of the statistics that would show us whether the law was actually working or not, because they don't want to have to show whether it's working. They want to keep these powers regardless of whether it's working. You know, I think the only way, frankly, that that'll change is if there's massive civil disobedience in parking lots, and the only time that's likely to happen is where there is, if the police really fuck up and go after people in a way that they shouldn't, as they did in 1994, arresting Food Not Bombs people for serving free food, arresting people for sitting on the sidewalk while eating food, and then you get the community, although they'd already been organized a lot against the downtown ordinances that were passed by the elder Coonerty and Scott Kennedy at that time, and Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews. We had successful resistance to the parking lot law from the drum circle, but that's the only place there's been successful resistance. In other places, tickets have been given out, people have been driven away, and the police can actually say, you know, yeah, we're able to do this without a lot of problem. Police, you know, people will, you know, they see us coming with their badges and their guns, and they go the other way. It doesn't matter about the Constitution. They see the uniform, and they're out of there, man. Is that a good thing for Santa Cruz? I don't think so. Finishing this up.
I think then we need a program to deal with the problem in the new place.
Oh, I don't even know if it's working yet, because this does not tell me anything about whether it's working.
That's why we're
except that
get
he said that
the
they
agenda.
Were happy.
So we'll get it. Can we have something on the agenda about this next time? Okay. And, Sheila, this was passed out before you got here. It's from June, and...
So what got on the agenda was that they would get Zach Friend chatting with them and reassuring them that it was working well, and then a member of the parking authority doing the same. And we'll be hearing their PR and my reaction, by the way, which I was not allowed to present in any detail to the commission, but I'll be able to present it on the air on Sunday. Let's turn now to a few street interviews. This is with a Norwegian woman who I ran into in front of New Leaf a couple of weeks ago. Sergeant Harms was standing nearby, and we had this is kind of a continuation of a conversation I played an earlier part of. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. The name of the show is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Stay tuned.
So what you see here is there's also been a large rainbow gathering, which is a community of... kind of people with a hippie lifestyle, sort of a communal lifestyle. They gather once a year. They did it this year in Oregon.
Yeah.
And they're coming through town now. A lot of people are sort of migrating to back to where they were or to other places. And Santa Cruz is sort of a stop along the way.
All right. Okay. Well, I don't support them too much, I'm afraid.
What?
They were in Norway, and I was like having a studio I used to paint. And they turned the whole place into like a party, and I don't know.
It wasn't good.
No.
They didn't clean up after themselves.
No, they didn't clean up, and we were very happy when they left.
And so rainbow gathering people.
Yeah, that was rainbow.
And, because I guess it depends on who you're talking to, but some of them are very careful about what they do, because they're, you know, they take their ethic pretty seriously, whereas others, I guess, are not.
Yeah. So maybe we were just unlucky with a group that came to stay at our place.
Possibly so.
Yeah.
Here comes Marilyn here runs a kiosk, and she's kind of trying to keep her tables clean, and she's also concerned about gatherings of people who are... they're actually, you know, I mean, there's no problem here at the moment, and... But, you know, if people start smoking and blowing smoke in people's face, or... I don't know. It's, I happen to think it's a positive thing to have different groups of people in the public space.
And I want to correct what I said. I have not heard a case of anybody blowing smoke in a customer's face. But there have been complaints of people smoking nearby, near the kiosk, within 20 feet of a door, the smoking area. And it's... Even before a customer complains, the store managers like Marilyn or David of Cafe Campesino, I'm not sure if he does it, Marilyn does this a lot. She's pretty, you might call it proactive, you might call it overly protective, depends on how you view it, comes out and tells the smoker, you know, you're not supposed to smoke here, there's an ordinance against it, which I believe is the case. There's no ordinance against loitering, and there's a bogus sign about that, but there's a sign that does reflect a real ordinance around smoking. I'm not a big fan of smoking, but I also think it should be a matter between individuals rather than a cause for an arrest or a citation. In other words, if you don't like someone smoking, you ask them, can you put it out? It's bothering me. Because sometimes smoking doesn't bother people. And the idea that, you know, for example, it's preposterous to believe that smoking is any worse than the exhaust fumes of the cars that are driving by. I can't really believe that. I mean, although I have seen no scientific evidence, maybe I can get some of you callers out there, some of you scientists and researchers, to give me some information as to whether the pollution from cars is more or less toxic than secondhand smoke outside from smokers. Anyway, this is a situation where I have the same problem, I think, that I see around me. I tend to get subservient to authority, whether it's a merchant, that I like Marilyn of Alfresco's, or a police officer that I'm trying to be friendly with. It's easy to start kind of picking up on the mythology of the situation rather than the reality of the situation. And the reality is that merchants have taken over a significant portion of the sidewalk along Santa Cruz's Pacific Avenue and privatized it. And you see this most outrageously with this new chain across the New Leaf Market sidewalk at night, when there's no merchant use whatsoever of that sidewalk. Now, there are complaints that people litter at night and cause trouble there litter at night. There have been the occasional fight. There has been some disturbing the peace at night. I've heard of no arrests for disturbing the peace. I've seen some intoxication. You see intoxication near bars. The complaint of the New Leaf personnel that I talked to was that they come there in the morning and there's a lot of trash there, and that it's a pain in the ass for them to pick it up. And I appreciate that. You know, I mean, I don't think it's nice to leave an area trashed, and I don't like that either. But it seems to me there are other ways to deal with it than closing off an area all night that should be open to the public to begin with. This area was supposed to be public space, and it was sold off by the redevelopment agency to the businesses as a social engineering maneuver to get rid of young people and street culture that was there in 2002. They put up that green fence around the area. And you see this happening elsewhere, too, around Badass Coffee, you know, down at Zoccoli's, up near Chianti's. And there it's not done so much, you know, I don't think, to remove street culture as to simply profiteer off the sidewalk and it removes significant numbers of public space, which is not replaced. But it's obvious that there is a social engineering mentality happening, because benches have been removed from near the metro bus station area. Change-making machines have been put in that make it illegal to sit within 50 feet in either direction, specifically designed, obviously, to remove groups of people there that they don't want. And I say it's obvious because the machines appeared after the people were there. And then they have this, you know, classical music to drive away people from the metro who used to be hanging out there, and security guards, a whole series of devices to move along street culture. I find this abusive. I think street culture is a good thing, not a bad thing. I think we need more diversity and less commerciality. And I think that we have an entire community we're trying to serve here, and not just, you know, the Downtown Commission's clients or the people that support, you know, Ryan Coonerty's mayoral or city council campaign. I felt that way for some time.
People in the city council have created laws and are assigning police officers to enforce laws where this is designed to selectively go after groups of people. And I don't like that. Even if they're rainbow types. Yeah. But you can get a different perspective from a police officer.
Maybe you should talk to him.
Oh, I do. Well, let me introduce you to this sergeant. Sergeant, okay. I'd like you to meet a Norwegian visitor here. This is Sergeant Harms. Sergeant Harms, this
is Mike.
Nice to meet you. And you can get a different, you can get a perspective from the sergeant as to what's cooking. He's been called down a couple times today to keep an eye on the scene here. That's what I heard.
Right,
but I mean, today there have been like three or four calls out to this scene. But we're not talking about brutal, violent problems, but just sort of concerns about people smoking and things like that, right?
Well, to be totally honest with you, there was an attempt homicide right there on that corner that was directly related to the people who are hanging out here. So we try to manage the people before they get to those, before they rise to that level of violence.
Yeah. Today, a homicide?
No, it wasn't today.
Yesterday?
I've seen several of the people who were involved in that here today.
So this is a homicide in the last week? In the last week?
Oh, it's been probably a month or so. Then it was stabbed.
Right. It was a drunken scene or intentional homicide, or what was the...
It was a jealous rage amongst homeless persons.
He's pretty peaceful. I mean, and you weren't...
You know, this is an example of falsification that I think Sergeant Harms is really engaged in, or let's say exaggeration, because the notion that Sergeant Harms is patrolling the area to stop jealous rage between homeless people causing a homicide, because he saw a couple of the people who were involved in that, and he isn't clear about what that involvement meant. I mean, if they were suspects in the crime, they would probably be incarcerated, I would suspect. Homicide is something that has a pretty high bail, and homeless people don't usually get out on bail easily. So it sounds like bullshit, Sergeant Harms, I got to tell you. And I say, I don't mind being candid with Sergeant Harms to his face. In fact, you're going to hear some dialogue I've had with Sergeant Harms in the future. I've had this dialogue, and I'll be playing it on Sunday. Harms and I have a candid exchange of views. But the fact of the matter is, he's there to enforce the petty ordinances around New Leaf Market in order to drive away groups of people that... As Marilyn of Alfresco's puts it, in her perception, dominate the area. She doesn't want to see that kind of domination. And I got to say, Marilyn is a liberal person, liberal mentality. We've interviewed her before on Free Radio. She's run the kiosk at Alfresco's for a number of years now and been quite liberal in her policies, letting non-customers sit at the tables, though I think that whole public area... If businesses did not allow that, I'd be setting up a table to protest and encourage the boycott of those businesses, because this is a huge bunch of public space that's been removed, with no alternative space being allowed. And the same thing is, of course, happening now at night, and it's concerning me. And I'm talking about doing some petitioning around this issue down there, because I'm hopeful that we can. Restore public space, or at least stop them from seizing it as quickly as they are. Let's hear a little more. Upcoming up next shortly is Uncle Dennis from The Cream to the Dregs, and I'll be coming up on Sunday with another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 9:30 in the morning. Also want to remind you that the human rights organization concerned with issues like the breaking of Donna Dice's arm by Sergeant Lamas and numerous mass ticketing that's going on downtown against musicians and other people on the streets stepped up this summer. Maybe it's rookie training, hard to tell. We'll be talking about these issues at the Human Rights Organization, 2 o'clock. And we now meet at the Taqueria Vallarta at Cathcart and Pacific, 2 o'clock on Saturday. So check us out then.
Held for any violent incidents today, right?
No, I'm here to prevent those things.
Hmm.
And if I'm able to manage crowds and things like that. And
But there's no reason for you to be here at this particular moment in terms of...
This particular moment, because I'm here, it's absolutely perfectly peaceful.
Or perhaps everyone's leaving because they're afraid of the sight of your uniform and afraid they're violating minor ordinances.
That's ridiculous.
No, that's standard. That's what happens here.
I've had, I don't know how many people thank me for being here, and thank you for my presence.
Well, I would thank you at different times, too, if I saw you preventing a violent incident, for sure.
Well, how am I supposed to prevent violent incidents if I'm not around, you know, interacting with the public? How do I know when a violent incident is going to erupt if
I'm not really
spending my time?
I'm not criticizing you for being here at this particular point. Perhaps I should be, I don't know, but there has been no... You said that you've seen individuals here who in the past were perhaps linked to another violent incident that happened...
Or several other criminal acts, correct.
By criminal acts, you don't mean things like possession of marijuana, do you? I mean, it depends on what you mean by criminal acts, of course.
Yes, true. There are many different...
We're talking about violent acts against individuals, I'm concerned. We're talking about the drug war.
One should say that marijuana has... been the root of many violent acts.
Unlike
well.
Alcohol, which is a fine. Well, but it's sold in the local bars. Why don't you go bust these bars? I mean, hey, you might be into that.
You know what? That's I'm here to uphold the laws, and so far, alcohol is completely legal.
And
it's just intoxication is not. So we deal with intoxication levels, and people who possess certain levels of marijuana or don't have the proper documentation, then we might take some kind of enforcement action.
Hmm. Well, I know that Officer Sims and. Forbes arrested a man with a medical marijuana documentation for medicating not a block from here, not a week ago, which I regarded as an unfortunate incident, and unfortunately sort of the norm rather than the exception of the Santa Cruz Police Department. No offense to you, Sergeant Hart.
That's okay. I can't speak to everything that every officer does in this city.
Right on.
So I'm not familiar with that particular incident.
Right.
But I would hope that everyone that... chose to smoke marijuana would do so with respect for the rest of the community. You know, there are a lot of children present, and they don't necessarily need to be exposed to those kind of things in the downtown environment.
Well, you know, I think there are worse things for children to be exposed to than marijuana smoke, frankly, like tobacco smoke, for instance.
True, and, you know, the way that the laws are, we're able to deal with that when the people want those things.
Not to smoke?
Well, if that's what the public wants, if that's what the shop owners want, you know, if that's what people in the cafe want, they don't want people smoking there, some of the restaurants. You know, designated areas are perfectly fine and completely lawful.
Okay.
However, when you're infringing on other people's rights to not breathe smoke, so, just asking for mutual respect.
Here. Okay. But there are pubs here that you can smoke, aren't there?
Yeah, there are locations to smoke, yes.
Yeah, okay. In Norway, we have, that's not allowed to have, no. Not at all. Like, you cannot even have a pub and call it private. And it has to be...
We're talking about tobacco smoking.
Yeah, tobacco smoking.
What about those old Norwegian sailors with their pipes?
Yeah, well, they...
What about them,
In their boats.
In their boats. Get them. Send out the Coast Guard, I guess.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Thanks for being with me on this edition. If you want to criticize, comment, or you want to be a guest on the show, give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. In the meantime, if you see people being mistreated, veterans or non-veterans, I want to hear about it, particularly if it's our police force, our Parks and Rec Rangers, or our merchant community that is doing it, and if there's discriminatory behavior involved. Camp responsibly out there. Camp lightly on the land, respect the environment, and respect each other if you can is my, as always, obviously, you know, the thing to do. And keep us all advised as to what's going on out there, because the Sentinel certainly isn't, the Good Times isn't, and you're the ones who have to do it. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Judy has a tryout with the pep squad. I've been pulling strings all afternoon. She's following in footsteps that were following in footsteps. I don't believe this day could end too soon.
every little thing that he destroys. Did you move again? I think you moved again. You must have moved again. The afternoons I sent you a return. And I couldn't find your number. No one has your newest number. It's no wonder everyone is so concerned. Every Tuesday I wish he'd pay attention, 'cause I don't have to mention that I'm the one who sees that birthday suit. Did you hear the sordid details, all the really sordid details, why the Millers and the Myers got divorced? Seems that there's no way of knowing through the comings and the goings just which progeny came flowing from which source. There's a barbecue at everybody's house tonight. There are people who would love to see your smile. There's a never-ending flame, and there's a burger with your name, and we all hope that you can make it for a while. Mr. Keene retired from the classroom. He was really old when we were only five. They gave him a gold watch, but the way he smelled of scotch, it's amazing that that guy is still alive. And everybody's talking about the paper. Barry doesn't even want it in the shop. They raised the price 5 cents, which seems a little dense, since Garfield is no longer right on top. There's a chance to get to you haven't seen and never called. There's one store that's open late, and there's a name tag by your plate, and we all hope that you can make it after all. Has it really been so long since we were sitting at that place? Do you remember what's his face and what's her name? And how about the family? I wonder about your family. For the most part, our family's all the same. And I hope this letter finds you at least as happy as I am. I've got more happiness than I could ever use. And I hope that you forgive me. I've been really, really busy. And a form letter's the only way to cover all the news. Someone doing something somewhere close tonight. There are faces that have never gone away. There are photos we can take, and there are memories at stake, and we all hope that you can make it back this way. There are pictures in a book, so we remember how you look, and we all hope that we can meet.
Or slow? Do you like to be the first or last to know? Is there someone you could phone so you won't be here alone as you learn about your future blow by blow? Did you ever have the feeling something's died? Did you ever notice nothing left inside? If I told you I was spent, would you wonder what it meant as we wander through the silence side by side? I could never tell what you were thinking,
Maybe if we talked a little less and listened more, every day that passed I felt a sinking, deeper than I ever sank before. I'll be coming in the morning for my life, and I hope that you'll forgive the twisted knife. But when it comes right down to it, we just never really fit. And I wish you better luck with your next wife. You're a lovely boy, Doug, such a lovely boy. There's a lovely girl out there still waiting. You deserve some joy, Doug. You deserve some joy. You're a lovely boy, Doug. You're a lovely boy.
All right, we'll just leave it right there. I want to thank Robert for another great show. This is Uncle Dennis on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org. And stay tuned for From the Cream to the Dregs. Let's start off with a little bit of Led Zeppelin.
Baby, can't be satisfied. Trying to worry, baby.